This is Marked, an oral notfic by Calicuria. For Kira no Kira, also known as Hatokana Mind and Kyashin, for the Sundial Exchange 2020. Please note, I am doing my best, but I am a native English speaker, do not speak any Chinese languages, and certainly no other tonal languages. So while I'm doing my best, I'm afraid the tones might not be quite on target. Sorry. So, the prompt I was given was Guardian novel. Quote, "This is totally optional, but there's a type of Soulmark trope that I don't ever see but would love to see explored more, where instead of the Soulmark being some universe-granted thing, it's actually made by the couple in one life that reappears in the next. So it's more of a soul bookmark." Grinning face. "Considering reincarnation is such a big thing in the novel, I thought this would be fun to explore." And lo and behold, so it was. So the setup for this that I worked out is that there's normal tattoos that are made with a tattoo gun or a number of different ways. But then that it's also possible to make a permanent, really permanent mark on yourself if you really, really want it and you keep wanting it. Tattoos fade, but marks with a capital M don't. And no one really knows who came up with them or where they're from. And all sorts of different cultures and different groups have different recipes for the ink and different times and ways that people get marks. But the important factors that are common across the board are that the ink has to be made with the blood of the person who's going to receive the mark, and it needs to be made upon living, willing flesh. So as long as you continue to want to have that mark on you, it will be as fresh and bright as the moment you got it. Attitudes to marks have changed on different times and different places, depending on, you know, all sorts of things, whether or not the ruling individuals have them, whether or not the nobility have them. Various people have tried to restrict access to ink with a capital I and marks, but overall, all you really, really need is blood and a brush, so any attempts to restrict it have not been particularly successful. That said, in sort of the time and place that we're talking about in Dragon City, they are not well thought of. Zhao Yinlan, when he was growing up, was taught in school that people who had marks are selfish and can't be controlled, and can't be predicted. And that's rather frustrating for young Zhao Yinlan, because he has a mark. Now, when I say that marks can only be made upon a person who desires the mark, one of the corollaries of that is that marks won't take on children, or at least they won't take for very long. Children tend to be a little bit flighty, tend to burn hot and very fast in kind of what they want and how they want it. And so sometimes, you know, if they're young, the mark will stay for a day, but they'll get distracted, something else will become more important, and it will wipe off as if it had never been there. There's an exception to that.
though.
There are some children that are born with marks right out of the womb. Whether this is a good thing for the individual in question or not is, much like marks more generally, up to the whims of the place and the time and the fashion. And again, as with marks more generally, in this time and in this place in Dragon City, they are not well thought of. And so, when little Zha Yunlan was born, with the character Wei on his left shoulder, his father was furious. He had all sorts of plans for Zha Yunlan to follow him as the guardian, and they do not involve his son having a mark. His mother is less unhappy about it. In fact, she's quite pleased. Her grandmother taught her that having a mark from infancy is a thing to be proud of and a thing to be excited for, because it means that somewhere in the world there's a person who is so important to you that when you put their name on your body, it didn't disappear on your death. Instead, it followed you into your next life. And a love that deep deserves to be celebrated. I'm not sure how the spirit of Shenong's bowl felt about it. Possibly it didn't much care. There's a lot of other things to think about. But as I said, Xiao Xinzi was not pleased. And so he made Zha Yunlan always keep a bandage over the mark on his left shoulder. He'd pushed, I think, when Zha Yunlan was younger, to get the mark tattooed over, but Zha Yunlan's mother wouldn't let him. So Zha Yunlan grows up with very conflicting feelings about the mark on his shoulder and not able to tell anyone ever about it. It might even be at the root of some of his conflict with previous romantic partners, that they wanted to know why he always kept this bandage on, and when they pushed him, he knew that that was going to be the end of the relationship. Until he meets this professor of Chinese literature and arts at Dragon City University, and he is fascinated. This guy is so cool and does so many interesting things and is just so buttoned up and at the same time really intense, and his name, Zha Yunlan would swear, is on Zha Yunlan's shoulder. He's older enough now, we know, to have gotten beyond a lot of the prejudices that Xiao Xinzi tried to instill in him, which doesn't mean that he doesn't still have complicated feelings about the mark, but he doesn't reject it out of hand. And he doesn't try to repress his interest in Shen Wei. And so they go through the first few adventures in the novel. They get the sundial and go through that whole thing. And then, eventually, Zha Yunlan is under mountain with Lao Chu and Guo Changcheng. And in the novel, they're attacked by this thing that's described as a giant comb but with knives that sort of swings right by them and almost chops them into smithereens. And the way I'm imagining it, it swings right by them and almost kills them, but they're fine. But Zha Yunlan just barely gets out of the way in time, and one of the knives sort of scrapes across his left shoulder and leaves these big gashes in the shirt and jacket he's wearing. And Lao Chu and Guan Changcheng are very worried, but Zha Yunlan puts his hand to it and pulls it away and is like, "There's no blood, I'm fine." And everyone's a little bit dubious, but they don't actually have a whole lot of time, so they keep going. Zha Yunlan gets Lao Chu and Guo Changcheng to turn around, and he proceeds on ahead. The ghost slayer sends a tiny skeleton child to distract and waylay him, which doesn't work, but is adorable.
And I do want the story of, like, five times Shen Wei tried to use tiny skeletons to distract Zhao Yunlan. But anyway, tiny skeleton. And Zhao Yunlan finds the pillar, and it emits this incredible pressure and miasma that makes Zhao Yunlan faint eventually. But of course, it's more that he swoons into the convenient arms of the Ghost Slayer. So what I'm imagining in that moment is that, you know, he starts fainting and the Ghost Slayer shows up and catches him. But in the process of sort of Zhao Yunlan falling over and the Ghost Slayer catching him, the torn jacket and shirt sort of shift a bit, and that they got torn up enough that the gashes in it are quite wide, and that when they shift, the Ghost Slayer, Shen Wei, can see that sort of all the fabric over Zhao Yunlan's shoulder is quite torn up, and he's, you know, very worried and wants to make sure that Zhao Yunlan is okay. So he checks it, and there's no blood, but what he does see is his name that Kunlun gave him. And he doesn't really have time to absorb that because he'd wondered. He had been intensely drawn to Zhao Yunlan, but at the same time almost didn't want to hope that this was his Kunlun reincarnated. And now he has the proof of it, dares to hope that that way is for him. And that's just, honestly, I just imagine him blue screening. Like, in the theater of my mind and hopefully of my words, there is just this incredibly long moment where the Ghost Slayer is just sort of holding Zhao Yunlan and just, like, utterly frozen. And there's sort of crickets kind of in the background. And, you know, then things sort of keep on moving, and they get, they talk to Wang Zhang, and they Sang Zan back. And the whole time, Zhao Yunlan doesn't really have a chance to process, but very quickly he realizes that something happened, because he remembers the giant comb with knives sort of slicing his shirt open down to the skin, and then he remembers fainting, and when he woke up, his shirt and jacket and bandage were fine, as if nothing had ever happened to them. But he knows that something did happen, and he knows that the only person who was there, and who he knows has probably the power to fix his sartorial issues, was the Ghost Slayer. And remember, at this point, he doesn't know, and is only just barely, maybe, starting to suspect that Shen Wei is the Ghost Slayer. So there's this glorious comedy of errors where everyone knows something, but nobody knows everything. And Zhao Yunlan knows that the Ghost Slayer knows what his mark is, and Shen Wei knows what the mark is, but Zhao Yunlan doesn't know that the Ghost Slayer is Shen Wei, and Shen Wei doesn't know how much Zhao Yunlan has put together, and it's just all very dramatic and confusing, and there's lots of deep questioning glances. And at this point, it could go in a few different directions. And I bounced this around a lot and eventually decided that because of the medium I chose, I could have it both ways, and so can you. One way I imagine it could go is the first time they sleep together, Zhao Yunlan has this idea of how this moment is going to go, and he rips his shirt open and he imagines it as a very sexy moment. But instead, Shen Wei is overcome
by the realization that, yes, this is his Kunlun, and he, at least for a time, gets to be with him again. And instead of sort of the very sexy moment that Jianlan had imagined, it instead becomes this very intimate and emotional moment for them, which I think would be really interesting, because my impression of Jianlan is that he's very much at home sort of making the big classic romantic gestures, sort of movie style, in the rain. But when it comes to a sort of less stereotypical and maybe more genuine emotional moment, he's a little more at sea. And that switch from sort of what he imagined, the "now I'm going to show you my mark," he imagined that it would be this very like carnal moment that they're gonna fuck, and instead it ended up, because of Shenhui's really strong reaction, ended up being sort of a much more emotional moment, which I think would be really cool. Or the other way this could go is that Jianlan doesn't show Shenhui his mark the first time they tumble into bed together, or the second one. And Shenhui doesn't push it. He's happy to take whatever he can get. And then Jianlan has his vision of the past and of how Kunlun and the little ghost king met, and of the little ghost king giving Kunlun a necklace of teeth, which is disgusting but also kind of adorable, and Kunlun giving him the fire from his left shoulder, and Shenhui obviously carrying that in his necklace for the next few thousand years. And the way I imagine this going is that after Kunlun gives Little Ghost King the fire from his left shoulder and his tendon, and Little Ghost King says, "You gave me a name, you gave me the fire from your left shoulder, you gave me your tendon, let me give you something else." And Kunlun looks down at the Little Ghost King and says, "Okay, can you find me a brush?" And Little Ghost King does. And then Kunlun uses his own blood to ink the character Wei onto his left shoulder where he took the fire from. And then it's at that point that he dissolves and dies and leaves Little Ghost King all alone in a moment that is incredibly sad. And Jianlan is watching all of this. And in seeing the exchange that precipitated Kunlun getting the mark, Jianlan finally understands how much it means to Shenhui that Jianlan has his mark. And he comes out of the vision and kisses Shenhui. And Shenhui looks at him in confusion. This is something they've done before. And Jianlan doesn't know what to say except, "I understand." And what he means is, "I understand why this is so important to you. And I understand that you love me. And I understand that I love you." And that's what I got. I hope that you enjoyed listening to this as much as I enjoyed brainstorming it and then planning it and then recording it. Because it was a process, but it was a fun one. The end. Thanks for listening.